So in this, the second to last week of the session, it was essential for us to get the budget finalized in order for the legislature to avoid having to go into special session, which cost the taxpayers, at least in the past, about $300,000 per week. So even though the governor was late in getting the budget to the legislature, according to the appropriations chair, Senator Dan Brown, about 4 weeks late, the Senate moved quickly through this critical process to meet its constitutional deadline of today, May 5th. So this week, during the week, and this is Friday, and we're not usually here on Fridays, but this week, the conference committees, made up of senators and House members, met to reconcile the differences between each respective chamber's version of the budget. Once that got finished on Wednesday evening, the House voted on the compromise versions of the budget and sent them over to the Senate for us to approve. Then before the Senate got to vote on what I would say are arguably the most controversial budget bills, at least from my perspective, House Bill 10 and House Bill 11, Social Services and Department of Health and Senior Services. The House adjourned until Monday. So Thursday evening, they left. They sent these bills over to us. Then they left until Monday, which meant that there was no time to go back to them and reconfigure or revamp anything that had been done in the budget. So they put the Senate in a position of being unable to do anything but approve what had been sent over to us if we were going to meet today's constitutional budget deadline. So let me explain a little bit about what happened, because I think the Senate ended up at the end of the day in a pretty good place to be able to fund some priorities that we thought we were stuck being unable to fund. First, we have to go back to House Bill 2, which is the K-12 elementary and secondary education bill, which includes the foundation formula. So the House had fully funded the foundation formula at its new level, which is, again, $450 million shy of what we thought it needed to be 2 years ago. But still, the House had fully funded it, and the Senate appropriations chair did not intend to do the same thing. But when it was brought up on the floor, an amendment was put forward to fully fund the formula, and the Senate voted to do that. So the House and Senate were in the same position, fully funding the formula. And let me just say, this has been a priority of Democrats for as long as I've been here. So now, under this new formula, we're fully funded. Now, the problem with that, as the appropriations chair from the Senate saw it, was that now there were social service areas that were going to need to be cut. And this brings us back to House Bills 10 and 11. And the options were pretty painful from my perspective and the perspective of, obviously, as you will see, many of my colleagues. I'm going to go through some of those painful decisions we thought we were stuck with making. One was a significant lowering of the reimbursement rate to Medicaid providers, putting a burden on hospitals and doctors who accept our low-income Medicaid patients. And these are seniors, these are families, these are children, people with disabilities. These are all low-income patients who really need full access to health services. So that was one problem. Another option for us was to cut the circuit breaker, meaning that low-income seniors who rent the places that they live would no longer receive a one-time annual reimbursement of an average of about $500. These are people we've heard from who use this money for a variety of purposes, including to reconcile their annual bills, to make a one-time purchase of something needed for their household or even for their health. This would affect about almost 100,000 low-income seniors across the state whose income level maxes out at just over $14,000 per year. Another option we had for cutting: there are low-income seniors and people with disabilities who receive in-home services to help them continue to live in their homes instead of ending up in nursing home care. What we know about nursing home care is that it's even more expensive to the state for these low-income people than providing services to them in their homes to help them live their daily lives. So the Department of Social Services that determines each person's eligibility based on their needs, I just want to give you a little background, uses a 9-category standard. And each one of these categories, if one of these low-income people meets them, they receive 3 points against a total number of 27 points to make them eligible to receive these income services. So these things take into account stuff such as a person's need for ostomy or catheter hygiene, the ability to bathe, whether a person is incontinent, whether they need help with meal preparation, the taking of their medications, and other daily activities that maybe you and I don't have to give much thought to, but that prevent them otherwise, unless they have help, from being able to live and continue to live in their homes. So again, the nursing home option for these people, should they not get these services, would cost more to the state than providing these services. Now, currently, if a person meets 7 of these standards, 21 points, this person is eligible to receive in-home care. In the budget, there was a difference in the Senate and the House position, and one of the positions said, well, no, in order to cut back on our expenses, we're going to have these people reach 8 of those standards or 24 points before they're eligible for care. So this would have cut the difference between 21 points and 24 points. There would have been about 8,000 Missourians who would have been cut out of getting the services they need in their homes to help them stay there, and they would have ended up in nursing homes. Because the budget was written in a way that said, well, unless we cut off the circuit breaker and take money away from 100,000 Missourians, we're going to move the point level up to 24 and cut off 8,000 very, in some cases, sick, in some cases, just fragile and needy individuals who want to be able to continue to live in their homes. So not good choices, but the budget bills were written in this way, and then the House left and said, okay, Senate, deal with it. So I'm going to pause here and talk about why we're in this position. So a couple of years ago, a hole was created in our budget, and we knew it was going to be created. We cut corporate taxes. And when we did that, there were several of us who stood up in our respective chambers and said, let's not do this. We are going to end up without the money we need to continue to provide essential services to people to help them live reasonable, quality lives with access to affordable health care and the ability to age in their homes. That corporate tax cut, because everybody loves to go back to their district and say they cut taxes, that corporate tax cut was put into place, and now we're living with the effects of that in an environment where revenue increases are simply not measuring up to where people had hoped they would be, because they had hoped businesses would come here, expand, or grow once we put those corporate tax cuts into place. So where do these decisions land us? We're trying to figure out whether we hurt low-income seniors and people with disabilities who rent, or those who need attendant care to be able to stay out of nursing homes. Well, with some out-of-the-box thinking and some smart thinking from people on the House and the Senate side, the Senate was able to find a way out of this devastating dilemma. There are funds in many, many line items in the budget that seem to be obscured from the budget process. And some of these funds remain in these sort of hidden areas for a couple of years before they're swept back and brought back into general revenue. Rather than waiting for those funds to be swept under law, the Senate agreed almost unanimously to provide access to those funds and to allow the Office of Administration to choose from which unused funding areas they would sweep, so that each of these areas that I described earlier could be funded. So the 100,000 Missourians will continue to receive their circuit breaker refunds. Low-income seniors and people with disabilities will continue to receive the in-home care they need at the 21-point level. And even Medicaid health care providers, the reduction in the reimbursement rates for them, the reduction was cut in half. So while this is not the perfect scenario, it was one of those few moments where the Senate pulled together and really found a way to help fund the things that we think are priorities in some of these bills. Now, again, don't get me wrong. These bills aren't perfect, and still a lot of people that need services are not going to be able to get what they need. But I want to talk about why I think we got to this point. And one of the reasons is when House Bills 10 and 11 came up on the floor, and when the circuit breaker bill, which was HCB3 came forward, the Senate filibustered that bill. And we filibustered that bill till 6 in the morning. And what we did was we made a point to say, we care very much about this. We're not going gentle into that good night. And people came together and said, let's try to figure it out. And this week, In that way, members of the Senate came together to find some sensible, reasoned sense of compromise. So, you know, a lot of people think filibusters are all about just stopping things. They're also about providing thinking time and time for negotiation and compromise. So I think that's an important lesson learned in the last couple of weeks of session. Now I'm going to move on to a different conversation. And here we are here on Friday, and it's now 4 o'clock, and we just ended session 20 minutes ago or so. And the reason we were here so late on a Friday, when we're not normally scheduled on Friday until the very last week of session, which is next week, the reason that we're here is because we had a long conversation on the floor, because you may recall that Senator Rob Schaff from St. Joseph said that he was going to let the budget proceed because we were constitutionally required to do that budget, but he was going to stand up strong and say, we cannot move forward without facing ethics changes needed to take place in this legislature. And included in at the top of his list were ethics reform around the dark money in politics. And I know we talk about dark money a lot. What dark money is money contributed to a campaign for a candidate or against a candidate, or for an issue or against an issue. Dark money means that the people who are contributing those dollars are unknown to the public. Now, in my candidate campaign, I am required to disclose every donor, those donors' addresses, where they work, unless they contribute under $100. So anybody at $100 or more, their name is on a file that I report through the Ethics Commission. But 501c4s, which are nonprofits that are allowed to do up to half of their work in the political realm, are contributing dollars from their donors for and against candidates, for and against issues, without having to say who those donations are from. Sometimes those donations can be $1 million, $100 million, $600 million. We don't even know. We know that Governor Greitens has $1.9 million in undisclosed contributions. We know that an attack on Senator Schaff in his district in the last couple of weeks has gone out and been paid for by a 501c4 that is the governor's 501c4. So we know that the governor's organization, whether he was directly responsible or not, has put out information, and actually I believe it to be false information, disparaging the character of the senator from St. Joseph. So we were supposed to work on that bill and get it to a vote on the floor. That bill was talked about all day, and it was blocked by Senator Onder from St. Charles, who is, surprisingly to me, spent a lot of time trying to undermine the senator from St. Joe's ability to move forward a bill that would say, we need to know who these donors are. So for whatever reason, the senator from St. Charles, Senator Onder, is saying, we don't want those dark money donors to be disclosed. And I think the public needs to know that, and I don't understand it. As you may know, earlier in this session and last session, I have filed a dark money disclosure bill to make sure that 501c4s who are working for or against political candidates or campaigns, that those donors are disclosed. So my thinking is in line with what most of the public thinks and what most of the public said through the survey we put out, that we need to know where the money is coming from to fund campaigns, because we need to know who is beholden to whom. So we will continue down that path. I think this was a very unsatisfactory day for people who want to see true ethics reform, because eventually that bill was just laid over, and we'll see if we bring it up again next week. On a final note for this week, I do want to say that we were fortunate to have a hearing in the House on the bill that I put forward that has passed through the Senate. This is to ensure that our mental health professionals receive training in understanding and knowing how to deal with people who may be suicidal and recognizing the signs and symptoms. So in Dr. Frederick's committee in the House, Dr. Representative Frederick, we put forward that bill. We had some very moving and tear-jerking testimony. One person who came to testify this year came from NCSA, and when he saw in our newsletter that we were talking about this legislation, he contacted our office. He had lost his son to suicide just this past February and is really anxious to make changes in the world so that this doesn't happen to other families. So again, some gripping and compelling testimony. It was voted unanimously in Representative Frederick's committee, and he has asked that his committee members stand up on the floor in the House to support it and to try to keep the bill from being amended so that it can actually pass all the way through the process and become law this year. So we'll keep you informed about that. If it doesn't happen that way, count on the fact that a lot of people are encouraging us to move forward again next year and try it again, because this legislation is really important. It's critical that our mental health professionals understand and know how to deal with people in this severe state of depression that are close to taking their lives. So that's the news for this week. It's been a fascinating week here in Jefferson City. Thanks for listening.